This is Larry Mueller Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Jill Nadeau. We're talking about the importance of wetlands and the upcoming Wetland Science Conference. Our guests are Janice Rice, librarian and lecturer emerita at UW-Madison and a Ho-Chunk Nation member. Janice is presenting at the Wildlife Conference about the Ho-Chunk Nation's relationship with water. And back with us, the Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetland Association, Katie Belfus. What do you want to know about wetlands? Well, give us a call, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can send an email, and that address is ideas@wpr.org. Ladies, welcome. It's so good to have you here in the studio.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be here.
And Katie, first off, when is the conference this year?
Thanks for asking. The conference is February 21st, 22nd, and 23rd, so just 2 weeks away from now, and we'll be in Stevens Point at the Holiday Inn.
Okay. Do you usually have a theme, don't you?
We do, and this year it's wetlands central to Wisconsin, to take advantage of the fact that we are going to be, in fact, in central Wisconsin, and that we like to see wetlands as in the middle of the dry places and the wet places, right in the center, and also central to our community's efforts at building resilience. Wetlands really are key for managing stormwater, helping with water quality, and of course, wildlife habitat.
That was a really good choice. Genius. Janice, have you gone to any of the wetland conferences before?
No, I have not. So this is going to be my first conference, and I'm looking forward to it because it does overlap with some of my areas of interest. So it's going to be enjoyable.
For sure. What can someone expect if it's their first time, like Janice, coming to the conference?
Sure. Well, the majority of our content is aimed at people who are wetland professionals or water professionals, but we do have a growing number of folks who are managing their own wetlands on their own property and looking for more detailed information on how to do that and more connections with people who can help them with that. So we do get a lot of private landowners as well, but we talk about everything from plant ID to regulatory related issues to new approaches to assessing watershed health to help, as we were talking about earlier, building resilience. So there's really a wide variety of issues from very technical to very not technical. And we love to have a speaker like Janice come in at the end of Wednesday. She is giving our banquet presentation on Wednesday. And folks have listened to some very technical presentations during the day, and then they get to come and hear somebody share lots of stories and make other connections and really round out their experience.
You got a great lineup. I went online and took a look, and people can find it at the address?
Conference.wisconsinwetlands.org.
Very easy. Or if you just Google Wetlands Conference, it comes right up. So, yeah, you
Indeed.
Can do that, too. And we have a link on our website also. So, Janice, tell us about your presentation. What will you be talking about?
I plan to give some background history on the Ho-Chunk people and our presence in Wisconsin historically and then to the present day. And then I'll be talking more about the waterways and the way water affects us as people and our community and society as a whole.
And it's really important to the Ho-Chunks, isn't it, the water and what it represents and what it gives?
Yes, it's meaningful to us and not only Ho-Chunk people, but all Indigenous people. The water means so much to each of us and the ways that we go about our everyday lives, plus our stories and our ceremonies. Water is very central to our lives and our way of life.
Right. As to all of us, we have to think about that. We don't too much. So,
can I clarify one thing about the conference? Because I spoke about the conference as a whole, but I want to point out that we have two events happening, one Tuesday evening and then Janice's presentation Wednesday evening, that are open to the public regardless of whether you're coming to the conference. So Wednesday evening is our WWA Wisconsin Wetlands Association annual membership meeting. So if you want to learn more about our organization, that's a free event. We welcome you to come. And we're also going to be announcing our Swamp Stakes winners, but we can talk about that in a little bit. And then Wednesday evening is a ticketed banquet that's also open to anybody who's interested. And those tickets are on sale through February 16th. Maybe you'll be able to get them after that, but that's the guarantee date.
Okay. And as far as the other costs for the conference, I like the way you have it set up so you can be there
all the time, or you can be there for one day, or you can be there from home afterwards. So talk about that.
Yeah, so we have an option for, this is our first in-person conference since 2020. We pulled our conference off in 2020, about 2 weeks before everything closed down for COVID. And we're really, we had two great virtual conferences the last 2 years, but we're, people really have missed that in-person interaction. So we're moving back in person this year, but we are maintaining the, we are recording all of the presentations that happen at the conference and offering a reduced price option to purchase access to those recordings so that if you don't want to attend the whole conference or aren't comfortable with that or whatever, you can access the recordings for a reduced rate.
Okay. And the cost itself is pretty reasonable.
Yeah, I think I think it's about $250 at this point. The prices are going up a little bit. We always have an early bird deadline, which is behind us now, but it's about $250 for the, it's a 2.5-day conference. So great value. Includes lunch.
Oh, hey, right? Includes lunch.
Yeah.
And if you're a member, you do get a little discount.
If you're a member, you get a 20% discount. Wisconsin Wetlands Association is member-supported nonprofit organization, so we're grateful for that. And we also have a student discount, 50% off, because we really want to engage the next generation of wetland professionals.
Oh, that's great. That's really nice when that happens. So let's get back here to my other page that I was looking at. What are some of the other presenters?
Presenters. Well, we have a woman named Carol Johnson, who's a professor emerita from South Dakota State University who spent many years researching wetlands up in the Voyageurs National Park area, which is up in Canada, but just north of here, right? So similar landscape. And she's has done a lot of work on beaver-created wetlands, and she's going to be speaking on Wednesday morning about the benefits of those wetlands in terms of carbon sequestration and some of the concerns that other science reveals about the release of methane from certain kinds of wetlands and whether what is the balance of that and how can we know. So she'll be sharing that information. And then Thursday morning, our keynotes, we're going to do an armchair conversation, sort of building on this kind of conversation, right, of the joy of sharing information. We'll have two folks from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources talking about the wetlands of central Wisconsin and how they were created. What's the geologic history, the glacial history, the human history, and how that's impacted the wetlands of central Wisconsin. So I'm really looking forward to that. I get to moderate that conversation, so that'll be very fun.
Oh, fun.
I'll have to put my Jill Nadeau hat on.
I'll be happy to lend you my
excellent
hat. Janice, why don't you talk a little bit about how there's indigenous ways of land preservation, and why don't you talk a little bit about the traditional ways, and then maybe what's going on now as far as land preservation?
I really don't know that much about what's being done.
Okay.
I know more about the stories and the ceremonies and how we value the environment, and that's my main connection.
Okay.
And more like the aesthetics of it, the everyday life aspects of how our people survived. And we do have other people in our Ho-Chunk Nation Department of Natural Resources and all our other departments and our wardens and all those people that actually do that every day.
Mm-hmm.
And so they might be better to answer that question than I, but it's an area of interest that I have. That's why I'm so excited about going there and learning and listening and being among other common-minded people. So I'm looking forward to it.
How did the wetlands then play into traditionally into tribal life?
Well, there's several areas that I could address.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is that most of all of our lakes and streams and rivers are fed by the springs. And so when we didn't have plumbing and utilities and that kind of thing in the early days, most of the villages were all located near springs. And so when the water came to the top and bubbled up, that was where you would find our villages so that they would have a source of water. And then among that would be the wetlands close by or, you know, neighboring in the vicinity. And so it's also a very good food source. There's lots of vegetation that would feed the people, and it would that would be a place for the grandmothers and the children and the relatives to all gather and harvest what's there to be gotten during the season that it can be reachable, except the ice time like now. So that's one aspect that that I was thinking of when you asked the question.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another one that's slipping my mind right now, the other half. I should have written down my little note
yeah,
on the second portion.
All the time. Yeah. We can come back to it when you think about it, because we're going to take a little bit of a break right now.
Okay.
We're talking with Katie Belfus, Outreach Programs Director at the Wisconsin Wetland Association, and Janet Rice, Librarian and Lecturer Emerita of UW-Madison and the Ho-Chunk Nation, and a Ho-Chunk Nation member. She is presenting at the conference, and what would you like to know about wetlands? Are you thinking about maybe turning some of your property into a wetland? Give us a call. We'd like to hear from you. 800-642-1234. Our on-air producer today is Clara Neipert, and our technical director is Tyler Ditter. And this is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. After 11:45, we'll talk about how to turn your garden into a healthy bird habitat. But right now, we're talking about wetlands. Katie, you're also offering several workshops during this. Why don't you talk a little bit about those?
Yeah, we've got 5 workshops this year. A couple of them are related to wetland plant identification. One is on sedges, which is one of the more complicated or hard to identify species that are very common in wetlands, but they're very beautiful and fun to look at. So we'll have that workshop. We have another one on aquatic plants. We have one on wetland natural communities. So how do you tell the different kinds of wetland communities apart? What makes them different from one another? We have a diversity workshop, diversity and equality. DEIJ is the... I'm in my nervousness here, but the DEIJ, to talk about the interface between those issues of inclusion and equity and wetland conservation. So mm-hmm. those are a couple of the offerings that we have this year.
That's great. So much information. Sedges, I said they're gorgeous, but how many do we have?
I don't even know. That would be a great tidbit for me. And if people aren't familiar with what a sedge is, for many of us, they look like grasses. They have those same long, skinny blades.
Mm-hmm.
But if you hold the bottom of the stem, most grasses are going to be round, and most sedges have edges.
Yes.
So that you can feel this little triangular shape in your finger. So mm-hmm. that's my little tidbit.
That's a great way to do it. I never thought about that. But yeah, it's very, very true. So Janice, you were scribbling away during our little break. Why don't you continue on with what we were speaking about earlier?
The other aspect of the wetlands I'm thinking of, especially since we're going to be at Stevens Point, and if we're standing at Stevens Point and we look to the southwest a bit, you'll be looking at Wood County. And in that area, there's a lot of wetlands there, the marshes. And in our language, we call it Cheireja, which is where the marshes are. And as time went on from the early days, and the Ho-Chunk people started getting employment. One of the places that they landed was the marshes and in that wetlands area. And so they worked in the cranberry marshes that were really important to us. And so they earned their living that way and lived there to take care of their families. The other aspect to it is just the waterways and the paper mills that evolved along the Wisconsin River, and then in that region, then that provided employment for our people as well, and then got them acquainted with other non-natives in the community and made friendships and working relationships, and leading up to today, more people interacting with one another and learning from each other. So that's what I thought of as when you're talking about wetlands, how it has sustained our people and made us stronger for it, brought values together and families together.
That's great.
For the wetlands.
Yeah, thank you for adding on to that. Appreciate it. Let's go to the phones now. We've got Steve in Wausau. He's got a question. Hi, Steve.
Hello. I have a question for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. I'm wondering if there was any effort to do something about the proposed exploration drilling that was to take place near Wausau in Marathon County or over in Taylor County. At both locations, they were going to drill right in the middle of wetlands, and we didn't hear anything from Wisconsin Wetlands Association on this, even though there was a lot of outreach that went to the organization. Will there be something on this at the upcoming event? Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks, Katie? Steve, for your concerns about protecting wetlands. We appreciate it. You know, a lot of the work that we do on protecting wetlands and protecting them from development, or in this case, drilling, you might not hear about, because we do a lot of behind-the-scenes work. We have long-term relationships with legislators that we build every year. We were critical in setting up the Wetland Study Council, which is now a body of people from across the conservation and other related industries who people can come to when there are concerns about this, when legislators are hearing from constituents about problems, so that we can make sure that we're dealing with things in a science-based, thoughtful way rather than a reactionary way. I'm not saying that we support drilling anywhere, but just that we often choose to take a behind-the-scenes approach, which we feel like in many cases will give us longer-term, broader results than fighting specific cases. So I hope that's some sort of an explanation there for what might be going on.
So it's more proactive than reactive?
And relationship-based and long-term. We're really working with agencies within Wisconsin in addition to the legislature to look at programs that the agencies oversee and how those programs can be tweaked so that we can protect wetlands and restore wetlands more effectively and in a more broad-based sense.
Okay, and then to address Steve's other question, will you be addressing that?
I don't believe there is something on the agenda about that specific case, about that specific issue in that area, but we certainly are talking about wetland protections, both regulatory and policy-based protections for wetlands.
Thank you very much, Steve, for bringing that up. If you've got a question or a comment, give us a call, 800-642-1234. Lines are open, and we'll be happy to talk to you about that. You're going to have field trips at this conference. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sometimes when people hear that we have field trips at a February conference in Wisconsin, they look at us a little crazy. But people in Wisconsin are used to winter, right? We know how to get through it. So it is not necessarily the most ideal time to visit wetlands, but we hold the conference in February because that's when our folks are not in the field, right? If it's a growing season, a lot of the folks who might come to our conference would be busy. So we do have three field trips. One is to the Freckman Herbarium at UW-Stevens Point. So an herbarium is a museum of plants, basically, so you can go look at specimens and understand. It's a great way to research plants from the past and current. And then we have two field trips to area wetlands. One is looking at a variety of wetlands that have been restored near our conference area, mostly through mitigation programs, and so to learn about those different approaches there. And one is to Moses Creek, which is at the Schmeekly Reserve. Again, another wetland that's been undergoing some restoration and management, so talking about the approaches there.
Great. So that's just part of the conference.
Part of the conference.
Excellent. Excellent. What do you hope that people get out of going to the conference?
Honestly, the number one thing I hope people get out of the conference is a renewed sense of energy of the importance of our work and a positivity and enthusiasm for moving forward, energy, because sometimes we all get bogged down, and I say that with air quotes because I think people don't often realize that those are wetland words, right? Bogged down and swamped. They're not positive terms, and they are wetland terms, so just notice that in your language. But anyway, we get caught up in the day-to-day busyness and the struggles and the, like, it's so hard to get this permission or that permit or whatever, and we forget that it really is... We've gotten to this work because we love it and because it means a lot to us. And so to get that rejuvenation before heading into the spring field season, that's actually the number one thing. And the relationship, so that people know who to call when they're challenged and they can learn about somebody doing something that will help their work and they know how to make that connection.
Mm-hmm. Great. Janice, we talked about cranberries a little while ago. What are some of the other foods that were harvested in the wetlands?
Off the top of my head, cranberries were the real top of my list, especially because of the employment portion. But there's a lot of other vegetation that the roots that we can dig up and use for food. So I often think about these survivor type shows and they're wandering around and starving and not eating, and there's all kinds of food around them if they would just reach in and dig up some of the roots and find a food that is good for them. And then we've seen some shows that show some of that, but I really feel like the marshes have a lot of sustenance for the community, and it's also a place where you can find the small insects and the plant, the small animals, or the frogs and all the other, the fish that are there. Some people go out on the big, huge lakes and fish over there, but there's a lot of fish to be gotten right there in the marshlands as well. So it's a good place to go and get all types of food. And then the ducks come there, and there's all kinds of other animals, deer and raccoons and all the other animals that come and approach that area. So while someone is in foraging there and getting their food, there's also animals approaching. So you have to really be quiet, because then you can do a double whammy and get the vegetation and also get the animals that are nearby.
If your audience is familiar with Braiding Sweetgrass, one of my very favorite books by Robin Wall Kimmerer, who won the MacArthur Genius Award this year, which is very cool. There's a wonderful chapter in that book about taking her students in a field course into a marsh and going to Walmarsh, they called it, and talking about all the different ways that you could. They built a house out of marsh materials that they held their little classroom in. They built sleeping mats. They got food. And so it's a lovely chapter that talks about all the different ways that wetlands provide. So another place someone can get some of that fun information.
Yeah, there's a lot of it out there now. Yeah. So, yeah, you just have to kind of Google or talk to a librarian and they'll be able to help you out with that. What about rice, Janice? Is that something that would be, is that a wetland thing?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's not grown as wild as much as it is up on the Menominee Reservation and then farther north by the Ojibwe people, the Anishinaabe. But at one time, even down here in the Madison area and our lakes around here, Lake Koshkonong, and as well as the four lakes, Mendota, Kiganza, Monona, and Wabisa all had wild rice on them. And but due to agriculture and development and all of that, the habitat is not as providing the habitat to make the rice come back again. But there's always a lot of hope if people can make it more secure and not as industrialized as it is now. And also, you know, I see that somewhere along the streams, when there is a little more isolation from the general public, then there are places where wild rice can pop up. And I think someone even once told me in the region over near Middleton, in the waterways over there, some of the streams, wild rice is coming back.
And some people aren't aware, and I don't know exactly where the cutoff is, but there's a southern species of wild rice and a northern species of wild rice. And my understanding is that the northern species is more palatable. It provides better food. It's a better food source than the southern, for humans. The southern one does a lot of wildlife feeding as well. But and that, as climate change is upon us and the conditions are changing where we find some of these plants, in addition to the reasons that Janice mentioned, that's also changing where some of these plants are found.
So that's great, though, that they're popping up where they used to be.
And there's a lot of good restoration efforts as well, so.
Yeah. We've got a phone call. We've got Matthew in Blue Mounds who has a question. Hi, Matthew.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. This leads right into the restoration of wetlands. Your thoughts about beavers. You know, for years, being a trout fisherman, they were frowned upon because they increased the temperature of the trout streams. But now in the West, they're viewed very positively because they're creating wetlands, and during times of drought for the cattle farmers and rangeland people, you know, creating pools of water that their livestock can feed on. So how are your thoughts about beavers here in Wisconsin?
Okay, great. Thanks Matthew.
That's great. There are a couple of answers to that. One is one of our keynote speakers is going to be talking about beavers and wetlands and the relationship there. So that's one interesting thing. We also, the Wisconsin Wetlands Association hosts a webinar called the Wetland Coffee Break. And our most recent guest there was a DNR biologist who's doing research on this exact issue in the Driftless area of Wisconsin. What is the impact of beavers on trout streams? And so he gave a presentation about the data that we have thus far. And it's a mixed bag. And I think you're right, Matthew, that there has been this reputation of beavers as being bad for trout that has persisted in Wisconsin that doesn't persist elsewhere. And I think a lot of sometimes you get a story that gets told and so many people start telling the story that everybody just believes that it's a real story and that it might not actually get tied back to real data. It might have been more about somebody's opinion. I'm not sure, but that's some of the stories that I've heard. But there used to be a lot more beaver on the landscape than there are now, and there are a lot more beaver marshes historically than there are now, and there always were trout. So, you know, there has to be a way that these critters have figured it out before us. We had, I think he's been on this show as well, we had the Eager author on. That's a fabulous book about beaver. I learned so much from that, and so check that book out if you haven't already.
It's a great book. I mean, just even if you're not interested particular about beaver, it's just a really, really good book. And we did have, and I can't, I'm spacing his name, but we also had someone on just recently talking about beaver. It might be the same person that you're going to have on. So if anybody is interested in hearing those interviews, just go to WPR.org and in the search bar, put in beaver and then you'll filter it through. So you should be able to find it. Very good conversations. And I think a lot of people's minds are being changed regarding that animal.
Well, and certainly beaver dams and the backups of the flooding behind them do cause issues for humans on roads and driveways and whatnot, because it puts water in places where we don't want it. And so there are important ways that we need to learn to cohabitate with beaver. And certainly there's some places where we can't have beaver for a variety of health and safety reasons. So it's just it's a negotiation of sharing the landscape.
That's true. I like the sharing part. That makes a whole lot of sense. Janice, I saw you were writing down something again. Did you have something to add to the beaver conversation?
Actually, I have something to add about the other animals that are in the marsh areas and the wetlands. For the Ho-Chunk people, the muskrat is also very important to us. And they are considered a delicacy among the Ho-Chunk people. And so for my family and my relatives, when they've gone to the marsh, they've usually come back with some muskrat, and a lot of them. And so for our meals, everyday life, and then for ceremonies and special events, we would serve muskrat if we have it. And for us, it's really delicious, and some people wouldn't think that, but it is. So that was my thought, and it's a relative of the beaver, not real closely related, but they're both wildlife from the water and very valuable to us. In fact, if you watched the news several years ago, there was a bay near Monona that got renamed. And so the new name for the bay is Wechawuk Bay, which means muskrat.
Ah, cool. Great.
Because that's how our Ho-Chunk people maintain their lifestyle and hunting and trapping and making furs available to the fur traders many, many years ago, all the way up even into now, the recent days, the furs are used yet for,
well, and
for
sometimes
many people.
Muskrat features pretty prominently in origin stories. I don't know if that's true for the Ho-Chunk people, but in one version that I've heard, it's the muskrat who dives down to get the little bit of earth to put on the back of the turtles for Sky Woman to create a garden. And he loses his life in the process because he's so small to dive down that low, but he provided that critical soil. So,
oh, lovely. Is that
yes, I heard that story too. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you very much. If you'd like to contribute to the conversation, you can give us a call, 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Janice, what do you hope that people who attend the conference and hear your talk get to take away from it?
I think I'm going to be preaching to the choir already when I get there. But I won't really be preaching. I'll just be telling stories and relationships. But I hope that there will be more respect for the land and maybe another way of looking at it. Because you can look at it as an object and study it and put it under the microscope and do all those types of experiments with the wetlands. But I hope that by talking with the audience, there's a chance to learn a little bit more about how we're all part of this together, that the animals, the plant life, the rocks, the water, everything has its own spirit. And so some of these are our brothers and sisters. And so it's, and your mother, the earth. And treat things more respectfully in the relationship that we have together. So that's one thing I hope that would be conveyed to the audience. Maybe some people have already done that anyway, and they already have that feeling. But that was one thing that I would hope to achieve, maybe just one person learning a new way of looking at things as opposed to always, I shouldn't say always, but opposed to just treating one vision of our environment, looking at it in other ways.
Well, you just gave that to a lot of people that are listening to the show, too. So spread the word.
Love it. Thank you.
Katie, do you think that's kind of true? I mean, I think we all kind of, in our profession, we zero in to the minute little details, and we kind of forget the big picture. Do you think that's a case sometimes?
Yeah, well, I think that's true, and I think there's been this idea that in order to be a scientist, you have to disassociate yourself and have a emotional distance from your subject matter. And one of the things I've learned from reading Robin Wall Kimmerer is her ability to bring a Western science and traditional ecological knowledge both as equally valid perspectives to help us understand systems better and be better caretakers of them, that there's not just one approach. Western science is not the be-all and end-all, that there can be a relationship there. And in fact, to her, I think there must be a relationship there for us to be a citizen of this earth.
Mm-hmm. Very well said. So let's talk a little bit about the organization. Tell us about it.
Sure. Well, Wisconsin Wetlands Association is a statewide, nonprofit, nonpartisan organization, and we work across the state to help people and communities care for wetlands. We work with private landowners who own wetlands and have questions about how to take care of them. We work with private landowners who have areas that were wetlands historically that maybe had been converted to agriculture or some other use, and they want to restore them. And so helping them understand the steps and processes and connecting them with the resources and technical support to be able to do that. And we work with communities that are struggling with flood damages or water quality challenges. We've had an ongoing project for many years up in the Lake Superior Basin with the town of Ashland and Ashland County, where they spend 75% of their budget fixing their roads every year. And it's because they wash out when you get these ginormous, huge storms, which seem to be coming more and more frequently, and wash out entire roads. It becomes not cost-effective and really annoying to have to come and rebuild those roads every year. So we're working with that community and a lot of other partners to figure out ways to use natural infrastructure to try to keep the water on the land rather than whooshing down the stream corridors. It's that fast energy water that does all of the damage to the roads and to the stream corridors themselves. So it's been a long project because it's involved a lot of data analysis so that we can make really smart science-based decisions. And now we're getting into the implementation phase of finding and restoring wetlands and floodplains and connectivity on the watershed. So that's just one example of working with a community to say, here's your challenge. You're dealing with a lot of flood damages and expensive replacements. What's a different way that we could bring nature to be a solution for us here?
Mm-hmm. So how you're working with legislators, both sides of the aisle, I'm assuming that there's some on both sides that are very open to what you're doing.
Yeah, you know, it's true. When folks talk with us, it's really wetland conservation is not a partisan issue. It's a human issue. Water affects everybody. We've had very good success on both sides of the aisle with people saying, yeah, this is an issue communities in my district are struggling with, and I need solutions for them. Well, how can we help do legislation that will promote the kinds of activities that we need to protect our communities and help them build resilience?
And let's talk a little bit about your website, too, because you've got a lot of info on your website.
Well, thanks. Yeah. We hope that our website is a useful go-to tool for folks, whether you're a landowner looking for information, a wetland enthusiast, a community. We also, as I mentioned earlier, have this wetland coffee break series that we hope you'll join us for. That happens about twice a month on Friday mornings. We do record and post all those videos. And so we can, if you have missed those and you want to tune in to things you've missed in the past, all those recordings are available to you on our website through that Wetland Coffee Break page, or you can find them on our Facebook page as well.
And it's wisconsinwetlands.org, so easy to find. And, okay, before we have to close up here, Let's talk about the swamp steaks.
Yes, well, the swamp steaks was our special sweepstakes with a wetland twist that we've been running for the past year. One of our board members restored a 1941 Old Town wood canvas canoe that really, when we got it, could not even have floated. I mean, it really was in terrible shape, and he spent a lot of time restoring that canoe. We actually have some videos on our website of him talking about the restoration process. So that's the grand prize, and the entries are closed, unfortunately. We've passed that, but we do have we will be announcing the winners of that swamp stakes at our annual meeting, which is Tuesday, February 21st.
Okay, it's a beautiful canoe, just gorgeous. Are you planning on doing another swamp stakes?
Well, we'll see.
Oh.
You know, we have to. It's a lot that our board member spent a long time doing that restoration, so yeah. He might not be wanting to take another one on quite so soon. But
maybe something else.
Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah,
who knows?
Absolutely. So, before we wrap up here, Janice, do you have anything else to share with us before we go?
At this point, I can't think of anything.
Okay.
I'm just enjoying hearing the conversation because it just is overlaps so much with my areas of interest and what I do and what I enjoy in retirement, being so close to the water and streams and lakes. It's just a nice revival and very restorative to just be there.
It's great. We're looking forward to having you. It's going to be so fun.
Yes, it certainly is. Well, thank you both for being here. We really appreciate that. We've been talking with Katie Belfus. She's the Outreach Programs Director at the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. And Janice is Janice Rice is the Librarian and Lecturer Emerita of UW-Madison and the Ho-Chunk Nation member. She is presenting at the upcoming Wetland Science Conference, which is coming up in a couple of weeks. And please stay with us on the Ideas Network. We'll be right back to take a closer look at how to create a bird-friendly garden.